Hello and welcome to the Transmedia Podcast. This is me, Robert Pratton, and you can find me online on Twitter as Rob Pratton. And with me today, I have Lance Weiler. Lance, please introduce yourself.
Yes, hi Robert. Thanks for having me on the podcast. Appreciate it. My name is Lance Weiler, and I am a storyteller. I've been working in various forms and functions of storytelling for over 20 years. Have worked in film and television, have designed games, have built out installations, and I'm really fascinated about that, the collision point of story and code, you know, where they kind of collide. And I am the director, a founding member and director of the Columbia University School of the Arts Digital Storytelling Lab. And we at the lab are exploring the future of storytelling and the current landscape of storytelling. And I've been doing that now. I've been at Columbia for about 5 years. I teach in the School of the Arts, and I'm a working practitioner. So I'm developing some film and television and immersive theater pieces. And that's pretty much in a nutshell. There's a bunch of other things, but I guess in some ways I'm kind of almost like a multi-hyphenate or something. I'm kind of all across the board. I'm really, really very interested in just any place where I can use story as a tool to educate, mobilize, entertain, communicate, that kind of thing.
Very good. I can't believe that you've been at Columbia for 5 years now. I was like, oh my goodness, that time flies. That's quite scary for me, actually, how long it's been. But so, Lance, you've got a really exciting project that you're working on now, this Sherlock Holmes and the Internet of Things. Explain, what that is, and then we can get into some of the details of that.
Sure. Out of the Digital Storytelling Lab, we develop kind of programs, prototypes, workshops, all kinds of things, research. And one of our first prototypes is called Sherlock Holmes and the Internet of Things. The project and the prototype kind of grew out of this interest of looking at the work of Arthur Conan Doyle and realizing that when he was initially writing his short stories and they were being serialized, he was writing about emergent technology such as ballistics, non-contaminated crime scenes, different types of blood testing. And local law enforcement was reading that and saying, wow, that's interesting. We should actually apply some of those techniques. And so in a lot of regards, his fiction started to become fact, and in some instances, some of those techniques that he was writing about became the cornerstones of forensics. And so that notion of, kind of story as an innovation tool, it was fascinating, and it's something that we explore at the lab all the time. And then on the other side of it was this idea of the Internet of Things and just being representative of a new kind of emergent category. For those who don't know what the Internet of Things is, in short order, it's kind of almost like the Harry Potterification of the world. It's this notion that everyday objects will become connected to networks, and it's had some false starts, with like home automation things, and your toaster can communicate to your refrigerator and kind of things along those lines. But I think what is exciting about it is this notion of the, and David Rose talks about this a lot, this notion of an enchanted object, where objects can, they become aware of their surroundings, they become aware, they can be personalized in certain ways, they can be social, and it just becomes this interesting new way to embrace ubiquitous computing or comm technology, this idea that, our mobile devices that we have in our lives are kind of limiting in the way that they demand so much of our focus. And this idea that this new kind of space that's emerging that allows us to kind of use the periphery, to use technology in a way that's not as dominating is fascinating, and it feels like it has opportunities to be used for storytelling. And so we were looking at it and saying, okay, the Internet of Things is a new emerging category. So, you know, Sherlock Holmes in the Internet of Things looks and says, can we use a detective narrative to explore, you know, the ethical and political issues surrounding new emergent technologies like the Internet of Things? And in addition to the Internet of Things, this year we're also introducing Watson, you know, IBM's Watson into the program and the prototype, and playing with this idea of machine learning. So I should note that Sherlock Holmes and the Internet of Things is in its second year. It's been running for probably about 2 years now, a little over 2 years. And it has, you know, over 2,000 collaborators from more than 60 countries. And the thing that's really kind of fun about it is that there have been about, you know, closing in somewhere upwards of 150 self-organized events all over the world. So this little thing that just started as kind of this idea to explore new emergent technology through a narrative lens has become quite global.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that you didn't mention, because there's a, like a MOOC that goes along with this, isn't there?
Yeah, there's a couple different components to it. There's a MOOC which runs from August 23rd to October 6th. It culminates with a live event at Lincoln Center, where Lincoln Center, the Film Society at Lincoln Center, is our partner, and we'll run and build a massive connected crime scene that'll make use of the full Lincoln Center campus, and we'll do that during the New York Film Festival. So the components of Sherlock Holmes are, there's a MOOC, which normally that's known as a massive online offline course. It's normally known as a massive open online course. We're looking at it and we're saying, can it be a massive online-offline collaboration? And so there's the MOOC, which is an educational kind of learning and doing portion. There are meetups that are happening all over the world. And then there are a number of forked projects that have emerged in exciting ways that have been inspired by Sherlock Holmes and the Internet of Things. Some of those are like high school programs. Some are working with hearing impaired. Some are working around agriculture. Some are entertainment properties. Because what's really cool about Sherlock Holmes and the Internet of Things is it's all released under a Creative Commons license, a share-alike license, that's also commercial. So you can take it and you can go out and commercialize it. The only thing that we ask is that you adhere to the ethos of the project, and you contribute back to the core of the project with either knowledge, code, or, you know, what you've learned along the way.
And you mentioned, like, it's in its second year. What would what for you were, like, the main sort of takeaways of last year that you might be doing differently or, you know, add in this year? Apart from Watson, we'll get onto Watson later. I'm just thinking about, you know, what's different this year compared to last year.
Well, I think what's really interesting about Sherlock Holmes and the Internet of Things is that we've kind of mixed, like, design thinking with narrative design and game mechanics. And so we've spent a lot of time really kind of thinking about the why. You know, it's very much kind of a yes-and space, you know, where it was interesting the first year when we kind of did it, we did a survey and we asked all the people who kind of registered for it, you know, what the reason, you know, why. And I think it was like something like 85% said that they wanted to be part of a global collaborative project.
Wow.
That was creative, right? And that was really interesting. And so we kind of built more on that. And I think last year we tried to really set constraints.
Yeah.
Because we weren't sure what would happen. And we kind of pushed people towards this idea of connected crime scenes. And as a result, what emerged out of it were all these awesome forked projects, you know, similar to how software will fork, just people kind of running with it and using some of the design principles as a way to explore, you know, different types of projects. So this year we're kind of open a little bit more to that and basically saying, hey, here are the design principles for this. The design principles which emerged last year are the following, you know, the trace. You know, we found after running, you know, a paper prototype that we had developed well over 70 times, we ran it in more than 20 different countries, we found that people really responded well when they could see some little trace of themselves within the story that was being created. So that idea of a trace. The second design principle is this notion of granting agency. And we realized, because a lot of what we're doing within Sherlock Holmes and the Internet of Things is exploring the future of work and learning, we came to realize that ideal team sizes for this were about 5 to 6 people.
Yeah.
And that if we split things up so it wasn't people in a team the whole time, and we allowed people to do things as individuals and then come back into the team, it would increase the agency and it would improve what was going on in terms of the engagement, in terms of the quality of work, and so forth and so on. And so the second principle is this idea of granting agency. The third is a thematic frame. Sherlock Holmes offers an amazing kind of common grammar. You know, you might not know Sherlock Holmes, but you know, the work of Doyle has rippled throughout time. You know, it's like it's in all your procedural cop dramas. You know, it's in, you know, that pairing of, you know, Watson and Sherlock, that goes into a lot of cop buddy movies. It goes into a lot of television. You know, a lot of the tropes and things that he was working with are common. And even if you don't know that, you probably know a murder mystery, right? And so the language is common, and so that immediately means that you can hit the ground running. And then the last is this idea of social movement / kind of serendipity management, and this notion that it's about leaving room for white space, that a lot of times immersive or interactive or digital projects will over-explain themselves. And they'll be so concerned about somebody's user journey within it, they'll feel like that they need to beat it out to the level that it leaves no room for imagination, right? And so that notion of social movement and serendipity management was us realizing, let's design places for white space that allows people to bump into each other in unexpected ways. And from that comes these amazing creative sparks and things that you never even thought were possible. So those design principles are what we're using as a way to guide the various projects that people do. So the only thing that we're basically saying is create a 21st century adaptation of Sherlock Holmes. That could be a program, a game, it could be some type of a VR or AR experience, it could be something that was working in the social innovation space. You know, for instance, in Sao Paulo, they're doing really cool work with Sherlock Holmes and the Internet of Things, where they're tracing, using narrative deduction, to trace where food comes from, right? And looking at it in an interesting way. You know, they're running a high school program in South Central and Los Angeles that takes, in a charter school that takes a bunch of youth, and they're using, you know, kind of that deductive reasoning and critical thought and communication, creativity and collaboration as a way to tackle kind of pressing issues in the community. And so we're encouraging the forking. So that's something new, but using the design principles as a way to kind of experiment. And then I'd say the other big thing that we're doing this time is it's decentralized. Last year when we did it, we had a MOOC platform, NovaWeb, which is a great, you know, MOOC platform. It's very social. It has team building functions. It's interesting. But we found ourselves hitting up against almost like this, you know, it was designed in a way to teach. It forces you to teach in a certain way. And we wanted to be more agile in the way that we did it. And what we're doing with this project is it's not a traditional learning environment. It's more about embracing ambiguity and it's emergent. And so we found ourselves struggling in some ways with the platform at times. And so this year it's totally decentralized. You know, there's elements where each week you'll get an email via MailChimp that has everything that you kind of need in it. We're doing more with like character and kind of role playing. You know, we started off with like kind of a cool playful survey. Are you Watson or are you Sherlock? We're also kind of experimenting with allowing people to come in at different times throughout it. So even when, you know, I'm not sure when you're going to post this, but, you know, people will be welcome to drop in if they want at that time and they're hearing about it. So we're really trying to be more of a sandbox this time, and you know, so we're delivering things across multiple kind of platforms and services in an attempt to try to help people be more creative. Because some of the things with the platform is, especially within an education context, people start to, the muscle memory falls in, and you fall into line and you start to think of it as a hierarchy. And if there are people who are instructors, you don't think about them as collaborators, you think about them as telling you specifically everything that you need to do, and you start to think about things solely as assignments.
Yeah.
You know, and checklists. Whereas what we're trying to do is more of this notion of collaboration.
It's very cool. I mean, I know that we organised our meetup. We tied up with Madrid and some other places, and it was really what was really good from a meetup perspective is different people came with different backgrounds, and so they had a different perspective on the kind of design process. So some people were more into Sherlock Holmes and had much more encyclopedic knowledge of his works than other people. And other people there were kind of more technology, savvy, let's say. And it was really interesting mix of stuff that came out. And I felt like different regions came up with different variations that were more appropriate to their local cultures and so on. It was really interesting to see. I think it shows you if you find the right framework, you do unleash all these different outpourings of creativity. Whereas, like you were saying with a tool, if you're not careful, you select the wrong tool and then it limits everything because people build to fit the tool rather than the other way around. Have the tool fit what they're doing.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think, with the work that you guys were doing over in London and in Madrid, it is like the thing that's been fascinating about this project and why I'm so drawn to it is this notion, you know, I came up as a filmmaker, right? You know, so, and I'm a writer, director by trade. And at a certain point, I felt like, you know, film wasn't what I was, you know, the medium wasn't what I was. You know, I was very much a storyteller, but at the same time, I was interested in this idea of experience design, and I was interested in this notion of, you know, what it was like to bring together, build, design, and bring together people in collaborative spaces. And
yeah.
I craved that level of collaboration that film is so good at. You know, like I remember, you know, I spent thousands of hours on sets, you know, came up through commercial production, worked my way up through the ranks. You know, I was a DP. I was a camera assistant before that, an operator, and so forth and so on. I went on to become a director of commercials, music videos, things along those lines. And what I always loved about it was you could get a group of people who didn't know each other at all, that came from all different backgrounds, and they would come together and appear, you know, like at a certain time, you know, and then finish at a certain time, and you would accomplish these amazing things without even knowing each other, right? And, and it was incredibly collaborative. And I think I've just strived to kind of look and want to create that more and more. And I think in terms of the way where we sit now with technology literally disrupting so many different industries, I find myself fascinated by the notion of people being able to work in distributed teams, the notion of a global kind of landscape that you can work within. The moment that you kind of let go and you're not trying to control everything and you're just really thinking about, like, you know, how do I hold, like, this really amazing dinner party? You know what I mean? Like, really good food to nourish people, and there's drink to loosen people up, and then there's, like, this idea of just this really great group of people coming together who might not otherwise meet each other, but then to take it a step further to where they're able to kind of collaborate. And what we found, you know, through the MOOC last time is people got so into it. There were people that were literally saying, you know, the 10-week MOOC that we ran, they were saying, you know, I look at this and I value this more than my 4-year degree, you know, which is crazy, you know, but people were really into it and they created bonds. And when the MOOC ended in that October with like a global Sherlock kind of challenge, people continued to work and collaborate and do Sherlock inspired projects all throughout the year. So that tells me that, you know, the ingredients of what we were playing with and the desire and the human nature and wanting to connect and wanting to be creative is something that unfortunately is so stifled in most of our lives that people are really excited at the opportunity to learn from each other and be able to tackle challenges with each other and to be able to do it in a playful and collaborative way.
So, I mean, the thing there is that people feel like it's not compulsory and they're in it because they want to get something out of it, and they're free to get out of it what they think is most important for them. And too often, you know, standard courses, it's what you're being told is important, and some of it you might already know, some of it you might think is irrelevant, and so people have an opportunity to switch off and disengage. And with this, if something's not going down the path you want it to go, you've got an opportunity to sort of reassess, find another point of view, find something that is interesting to you, and then sort of re-engage with it. So that's, yeah, totally. I think something else I wanted to pick up on was with the film crews. Of course, the reason that they can come together from all different parts and just sort of gel and get on with it is because it's been very procedural. Everybody knows they have a particular role, and everybody on the set knows exactly what that particular role does. In this space, nobody's very sure what the roles are yet, and you know, certainly the procedures haven't been sort of standardized, and I think that's what's exciting as well. And that's why I think the dinner party analogy is very good, because it's people come together and we say, okay, we're going to do this, and people kind of try to find the roles. And I think one of the outcomes that we were looking for is to see, like, what is it that's important. If commercially you want to create one of these spaces and you want to use this kind of enthusiasm, what are the roles, what are the frameworks that you need so that you can sort of move forward, you know, and advertise for people that have got particular skills. So it's really, really good.
And I think it's just fascinating when you look at some of those things, when the relationship to the audience is changing, the relationship to the way in which people are consuming work, and the notion of what a story can be is quite exciting. And so I think the experimentation around, you know, something like Sherlock Holmes and the Internet of Things is basically saying, let's explore something and remove the notion of intellectual property from it. You know, let's remove that out of the gate, and let's challenge the notion of how stories are authored and owned. You know, what does that authorship look like? What does that ownership look like? And I think it's something that software has done for a long time. You know, you get that with like open source projects, but storytelling has been for a long time, and it's kind of ironic because it originally was so embellished, you know, around campfires, and it had such a rich oral tradition that as the platforms kind of emerged and the distribution outlets emerged, it became very locked down, you know, and it became very high, you know, like it was very much a hierarchy, right? You know, it came from the top down, and now it's just all chaotic. It's coming from all different angles. So I think that's interesting. You know, when I look at it, I wonder, what are some of these new emergent forms? You know, what will be the great works of the 21st century? Will those great works be like these massively kind of intricate things? You know, you look at something like No Man's Sky, right?
Yeah.
That's the title of it. Yeah. And you look at it and you're like, oh my God, an algorithm is creating a game that literally I could go and I'm on a, you know, like it's like going through the universe. You know, and I might not ever see another player, you know, and it might be just totally beautiful and maybe border on the lines of being boring, but there's something amazing about that. You know, it's like these infinitely generated worlds. And I don't know, it's just such a wild time to be alive and to be, you know, trying to do things with narrative or story. And so I think, you know, things like Sherlock Holmes and the Internet of Things is an interesting kind of social sandbox where we're trying to document it and share as much as we can around it in hopes that, you know, a category can be pushed forward, right? You know, that it can move away from being marginalized things. You know, you started by introducing this as a transmedia-based podcast, right? And yeah. And that notion of, you know, moving things from the margins and into the mainstream. And in some ways, I think the audience is ahead of, you know, the people who are in the various industries, right? You know, like the industries still struggle, and they struggle with control issues, and they struggle with how much of their gate they're going to open and what they're going to let people do. So that example of Stranger Things is really fascinating, because I think that binge watching element, something so simple in terms of the way that they chose to release their series, has definitely challenged traditional broadcast.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think that's an interesting development.
I mean, the mention of the software, there's a good way to talk about Watson. What is Watson about this year?
Well, with Watson, we're bringing it in, and Watson's interesting because Watson is really a series of APIs, right? And it's cloud-based. And so we're working with Bluemix, which is an IBM service that allows you to interface with a variety of their ecosystem. In our case, we're interfacing with Watson. And the goal to bring Watson into it is to kind of look and say, how can we start to introduce machine learning? We did a really cool meetup in New York, because we do kind of monthly meetups where we're very interested in creating hybrid learning environments. So the meetups serve as a way to shape pedagogy. They serve as a way to get community together. They serve as a way for us to do open design. And they serve as a way to help us work towards the goal of the collaborative project that we'll run at Lincoln Center during the New York Film Festival. And we did one like 2 times ago that was called The Art of AI. And so we have people from the Watson group, and we have people from OpenAI groups, and we have people from Columbia University and a number of other areas. And we started out with two creators who have a project that's called Sunspring, which is it was written by an algorithm, the script was. And then they went out and they actually shot the film with actors. And so it's totally bizarre. You can find it online. It's Sunspring. That project was fascinating because it was challenging the notion of how a story was created.
Yeah.
And so the guys behind that, the creators behind that, they're looking at using algorithms and AI as creative enhancement, right? It's not necessarily meant to be a replacement.
Right.
And so what we're doing with Watson is kind of exploring this notion of how can machine learning be of a creative enhancement to a group's storytelling abilities, and what might that look like? So we're kind of expanding upon the project and bringing Watson into it. So, for instance, the user experience at Lincoln Center this time will be that you come into a room and you're waiting, and you're kind of sitting in a room and you're waiting, and all of a sudden somebody bursts in and they're kind of upset, and there's 4 people carrying large office boxes. They set them down on each table, and the person says, I Scotland Yard is screwed up entirely this time. I'm so sick of their dysfunction, I quit. And they leave, and all the people leave, and they lock the door. And then the boxes all kind of sit there, and then all of a sudden they start to ring. And then people open the box, and they find an old rotary phone inside. And the rotary phone becomes a docent that leads them through this experience and allows them to communicate with Scotland Yard. But it's just through these really cool interactions with an artificial intelligence, right? And as they move through and they realize in each of the boxes are all these scattered artifacts that are a part of a number of different crimes, and they're all mixed together. They then kind of move with the phone and use it as a way to eventually create the crime scenes, place the objects, figure out the clues, and then solve the stories. And then they report that back to Scotland Yard through the phone, and the phone analyzes it in real time and then spits out through like a little thermo printer the correlation to which characters and which stories from Arthur Conan Doyle's Sherlock canon it's related to. So all of a sudden it's spitting out and it's saying it's like this particular character, or it's like the Hounds of Baskerville. So the story that the group has created is then correlated to the you know, a repository of, you know, basically bringing in through Corpus, you know, all of Arthur Conan Doyle's stories. So, you know, that's just our one little experiment. And in 2017, we'll take a further step with machine learning as we do an adaptation of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. So that'll all be about machine learning and storytelling colliding.
Very cool.
But this is like kind of like a little step towards it. And we'll be expanding next year Sherlock Holmes again, because the project is a multi-year project.
Very good. Very good. So I'm going to wrap up the podcast. It's been fascinating, as always, talking with you. Where can people go? Have you got a URL where people can maybe sign up, find out more, and find out more about you?
Yeah, they can go to sherlockholmes.io. That's sherlockholmes.io. And there's a quick start guide there that'll help people get up and running with the project. And they can find out more about the Digital Storytelling Lab at digitalstorytellinglab.com.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Lance. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Thanks, Robert. I appreciate it.